Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 104 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again. Today on the podcast, we're going to have a 20 or 25 minute talk with Tracy Wilson because there's a lot of stuff going on for gun owners, even just this morning. Tons of breaking news, actually. And I've got some other things to say in the intro, so I'll try to keep that short. As I always say every time, it's never short, but I keep saying it for some reason. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Vortex, the Force of Optics. Thanks to everyone over at Vortex Canada for continuing to support the podcast. We really appreciate it. Check them out at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. And to our great friends over at Safari Club International, the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter. We really appreciate their support of the podcast. You can check out all their great work at saskriversseci.com. That's saskriversseci.com. All right. So, like I said, I'm going to try to keep this short. First thing I want to talk about real quick is the comments, right? Like, I really want to start addressing comments because there's so much, you can get to know us so much better by me answering your questions directly. But because when I answer somebody's question, I don't like to, like, here's a little talking point on that question and that's what you get. Like, some of these require a lot of talking and it's just going to make the podcast too long. And I think a lot of people will be like, well, if I want answers to those questions, you know, make a different video. So that's what I decided to do because I really want to do it. So I think what I'm going to do at least once is make a video and I'll call it CCFR Q&A episode 1, November 25th, 2021. And that way I can talk for as long as I want about these things and you can listen for as long as you want or just turn it off. It doesn't affect the podcast. So is that going to work? I don't know. Because I want to start this talking about comments thing, and apparently it's not working. So this is everything takes so long to explain. So look forward to that. I'm going to see if I can get maybe one of those done tomorrow. We'll see. And next thing is an update to the Mass Casualty Committee. So someone in the closed CCFR group had asked, hey, you know, are we still part of the Mass Casualty Committee? And is there an update about that? And it's like, yeah, you know what, come to think of it. It's been a long time since I updated anybody on that. So here's the update. I was kind of out of the loop at the committee. I talked to them in advance and let them know what my situation was, but I was in cancer treatment. I sort of still am. I'm recovering from radiation, obviously. And I was going to be out of the loop for 3 or 4 months. They were fine with that because participants really weren't playing a meaningful role in the committee up till now. So the committee's been going for, what is it, about 8 months, right? And people are like, you know, what's taking so long? So this is what I wanted to explain. And I wouldn't know why it takes so long to get to the bottom of these types of things either until you're actually part of a process like that. And then you start to understand why these things take the time that they do. So basically, here's what's gone on. The thing happened in Nova Scotia. Then, you know, the government says, well, we're going to do an inquiry, find out exactly what happens. And of course, Bill Blair, being who he is, he's like, oh, you want a public, an open public inquiry? Yeah, for sure. So there's not going to be one of those. We're going to do it behind closed doors. You know, and we've listened, so we're not going to do that. And then of course, everybody goes crazy, which they should, right? Because there's a lot of funny things going on in this situation, right? You want to make sure that these things are looked into and the truth comes out. Like, the truth can be uncomfortable, but you need the truth, right? You need it. It's important because if you're not living in a society that doesn't put the truth ahead of everything else, that society is going to start to collapse, as just like we see in Canada right now, because truth is really hard to find. So anyway, the victims' families and victims themselves got what they wanted, and in the community, right, in Nova Scotia, got what they wanted. They got a public inquiry. So just that process took, I think, a month, right? Or was it more than a month? I can't remember. So then the provincial government had to write an order in council ordering this and had to start to create a budget for it. Then they had to pick the people. Then once they got that, they have to figure out how wide is this mandate, what can they really do? Can they subpoena people? Can they whatever? So you have to form all that stuff. Then you have to look for participants. Then you have to figure out who those participants are going to be. Then you have to orient them. Then you have to start to figure out what all the documents are, what's all this evidence that you need, and you start to have, and you have to start to request it from people, and they have to start to get that evidence. So where we are today is all of that, all of these documents have been coming in, and it's so when these documents come in, we have to figure out what we're asking for. Then they get what they're asking for. And then those documents have to be digitized, including character recognition, so that it's indexable and it's searchable. So, and is indexable a real word? Indexed and searchable. And so anyway, that's been ongoing. And it's not a million pages as far as I can tell yet, but it's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pages of documents that all have to get put in and indexed. And then what happens is the participants get emails, and it's like disclosure, document disclosure number 7, you know, or whatever. And then you look at this document, you're like, what are all these documents to figure out what's going on? Why is there hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pages? Well, you start looking just through the indexes at the title of what these documents are. And you're like, yeah, I guess that should be in there. And you look at the next thing, you're like, I guess that, yeah, that's probably a question that document would answer too. And you're like, there's 250 documents on this one disclosure, and there's several of them. So all of these things are up in this, in a searchable database. And then once all the disclosures are done, which has been ongoing, while that's happening, they're creating something called a foundational document. And this foundational document, what it is, it's a non-controversial logging of the facts. Like it's an outline, right? What happened? Who did it? Where did this person go? What did they have in their hand? What did they do next? Who was there? Who was affected by that situation? You know, who were they? You know, how did they get to that place? So it's a real point by point, like here's what happened over the, I think it was 20 hours or whatever, 18 hours. Here's what happened. And it's meant to be non-controversial, meaning that all of the participants and all of the stakeholders, right? Family members and victims and everybody gets input into that to make sure whatever is in that document, everyone agrees, at least, you know, as close as they can get to fully agreeing, this actually is the stuff that happened. And then in that document, there's questions like, you know, how come we don't know this? You know, so that you can look back later and go, we need more information here to find out what happened, right? So anyway, that just came out. So once I get caught up reading that, the next section where people will actually have input, because I don't need to read 700,000 pages of documentation. I just need to look at the questions that I have. What firearms were used? How were they obtained? How would they, and you know, this would be what our contribution would be. How would existing firearm regulations or legislation have affected those actions or the availability of those firearms? Or is there other legislation or regulation that could have mitigated what was going on? Stuff like that. That's our contribution. So I have to look through those indexes and say, okay, well, you know, if I need to know what the RCMP's policy is when they seize firearms, you know, from someone, or when they get a call, a firearm call, I have to see what exactly the RCMP's policies are local to where, local in Nova Scotia there. And if I have a question like, well, where did that policy come from? I have to find they have to find the policy document or the evidence or the information that they used to form what that policy was or who was in charge of that policy. So you can imagine where all of this extra documentation is required to answer only one question. So that's why all of this stuff takes so much time. You know, the whole committee and the participants, we can't really get anywhere unless we have some kind of logging of the facts. And just to get to the point where we have that foundational document was a lot of work. I didn't have to do that work. So other people did a lot of work to make that happen. Now I can sort of participate in that. So my participation should be over the next, 3-4 months. And then once all of the participants submit all of their contributions, then again, the committee gets back and they work that in somewhere to come up with some final recommendation, some final conclusion of what happened in their recommendations. So you can see why this takes months and months and months, well, years, because there's so much stuff to do. Like there are people full-time working all day long doing this stuff. And until you've been part of that process it's really hard to understand why it takes so long. And it's very difficult to have patience, especially when you're a family member, or, you know, of someone who was killed in this, or you're a survivor, you know, or you're someone that lived next door to someone who died. Like, that, I get that 100%. And the last thing, the CCFR recruitment contest, I can't say recruitment contest, staffer Steve worked really hard on this contest. The prizes are awesome. It's really easy to get involved, talk to your gun friends, get them to become a member of the CCFR. It's all set up there. I promised Steve that I would do actually a walkthrough, an actual, you know, so you could see how to do it, because it might be complex. It does take a little bit of effort. And I haven't done it. And I got a lot of things to do right now, including some medical appointments and stuff. And I haven't got it done. And staffer Steve deserves for all his work for people to participate in this contest. So if you go to firearmrights.ca, you know, you'll see right away the 2021 CCFR member recruitment contest, and just read this thing. And it says, want to start recruiting some of your own, some members, log into your account now and get your own unique recruitment link and your chance to win some awesome prizes. And then there's a member login button. Okay. So just go check it out. There's a recruitment leaderboard of people that have recruited people, you know, go check that out and, you know, recruit some people to help, you know, in our attempt to do everything that we possibly can, that's within the realm of possibility, to protect our ability to own and use firearms. So that's that. The bigger we are, the more stuff we can do. Anyway. All right. Let's bring on Wilson and see what she's got to say, and I'll come back at the end. All right, from Ottawa via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson. Wilson!
Giltaka!
How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good over here. Lots of stuff.
Yeah, always lots of stuff going on when you're a gun owner trying to get the government out of your life. So at least trying, right? Trying everything we possibly can. Okay, so the first thing we want to chat about is the throne speech. You watched the whole thing, I presume?
Of course. And then I rewatched it about three times because I'm obsessed with politics and I need to know everything that everybody says. There was basically, as far as guns go, they reiterated their promise to implement the gun ban buyback and, of course, make it mandatory. So that promise was reiterated, as well as sort of a bit of a tweak on the original promise to allow municipalities to ban handguns within their jurisdictions. They've sort of evolved in their language around that. And now what they're saying is they'll allow provinces to do it, which of course brings in a new dimension, because you've got some provinces like Quebec, where you've got, you know, the big city mayors and the premier of the province demanding gun bans. Of course, they would prefer a national ban, but they'd be happy to do it provincially as well. But then you've got other provinces like out west, Alberta and Saskatchewan, who have already put stopgap measures in place in the form of legislation to prevent municipalities from banning. So once again, a perfect example of Justin Trudeau and his cabinet finding ways to make sure they can really, really drive a wedge in between Canadians and keep us divided.
Yeah, well, making sure that he keeps Quebec happy, right? Which is
Oh, yes. Anything, you know, they want.
Quebec and Toronto. Keep them the happiest, no matter what happens, as long as you can squeak through and get a minority government at very least. But
And then another little dimension in there is a lot of people are saying, well, Doug Ford doesn't support gun bans, so Ontario's safe. And while they're technically right, we do have a provincial election coming up in June. There's a lot of vitriol and stuff thrown at Doug Ford and Jason Kenney in Alberta as well. So we'll see if they're able to hang on to government. But I don't think anybody in any province should sit back and feel comfortable about this, because we are all in their sights for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tweak in that language is important, certainly. It's good and bad for us, right? Like it's good for us because we don't have to fight municipality to municipality to try to drive this back times 3,200 municipalities in Canada or whatever it was.
Right.
And it's bad because you lose one province, you know,
everybody's in
trouble. And so, I don't know. They're such a mess. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And there was like nothing new in the throne speech. You know, this pandemic election that was so important that they had to call it when they did. you know, you would think he'd have something credible in there about combating crime, but absolutely nothing. It was just a repeat of election promises. Honestly, it was the most boring throne speech I've ever heard, and it just nothing new. It's just a regurgitated promises once again.
Well, when you have lefties on Twitter going, oh my God, Mary, what's her name? Mary what?
I'm not sure.
Stop. I got you. I'm like, oh, I should probably know that. Tracy will know it. Anyway,
I don't know.
The governor general, I went on Twitter and they're like, oh my God, she's got purple hair. I'm like,
oh yeah, they loved it.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Anyway. This is we're in a weird time where we're not being governed by the most competent, able people. That's not how we judge people. We judge them on ticking boxes and what's cool and what's funky and trendy. And that's why we're in the mess we're in.
Well, so. I think that's the nicest way to put it. I think it's a lot worse than that. But anyway, so the next thing we need to chat about is Legault and Plante they're screaming for a gun ban in Montreal at very least because of criminal shootings, gangs shooting each other in the streets. And I guess a 16-year-old died. I don't know the story. I've heard of it, but I didn't look into the details. But, you know, kids are getting, it's not the first child to get caught in crossfire, if that's indeed what it was. And now they think the best thing to do is to go to the IPSC shooters and take their handguns away.
Well, this is like the level of incompetence is almost, it's almost unbearable. You know, I'm a mom, you're a parent too. I'm a grandma. And I think about, you know, what it would be like if my child or my grandson was somehow caught in the crossfire of gang violence spilling out into the streets of my city. And then I turned to my politicians, tears streaming down my face, my life completely ripped apart. And their solution is, hey, I know, why don't we target those people that didn't do it? Why don't we do that? And I just think what a complete slap in the face and injustice to the victims, to their families, and to Canadians in general. Like, it makes me wonder exactly how stupid they think Canadians are. I've got a little more faith in people that I really don't think we're that stupid.
I
hope.
I don't know. Is it wrong for me to disagree with you? I think there are a lot of Canadians that are so, have such soft boiled minds that that they allow politicians like your Bill Blairs, like your Justin Trudeau's, and everybody else there, you know, your Chrystia Freelands. These people are just, they gaslight Canadians all day long. It's one long gaslighting session. And unfortunately, I've thrown this number out 100 times, right? But I think 40% of the population is very susceptible to gaslighting like that. And they'll believe anything. And, you know, it's funny. And then, you know, it's funny because when I say things like that, I remember our opposition going, oh, Rod and Tracy, you're gaslighting. It's like, wait a second. It's gaslighting if what they're saying is false. And I've said it a million times, like, I'll challenge anybody to a debate, anybody in the country. You know, I'll debate them three against one without notes. You know, there's only one group. Certainly in the, you know, and as far as it's the gun control issue is concerned, that are gaslighting anybody. So, and I agree with you. I mean, the, you know, terrible laws and victimizing people that had absolutely not only nothing to do, but no control over any of these things is it's an insult to victims. So,
It really is. And I know on Twitter, someone asked me, well, when these bans don't work and the violence continues, will they admit they're wrong? And I'm like, well, of course not. What they'll do is they'll say they didn't go far enough and they got to take more from us.
Yeah, of course. It's
almost, well, it's not almost. It actually is using these tragedies and using the violence and the victims out of it to propel forward with their agenda. And it's gross. It's gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really not about crime. Now, interestingly enough, I did an interview today on the Dan McDonald Show, which is in Windsor, Ontario.
It was great. Thanks. It was a great interview, and I've shared the link all over social media.
Oh, okay, cool. It was recorded?
Yes, Steve recorded it.
Oh, neat.
Staffer Steve.
So anyway, we were talking about this this provincial handgun ban. Of course, all the usual questions pop up, like, you know, do you think this will do anything to stop these criminal shootings? And of course, I'm like, no, it's 180 degrees in the wrong direction. And your proof is, the proof is, what is the mechanism that they're using to implement a handgun ban? Like, how do you implement a handgun ban when provincial and municipal governments don't have jurisdiction? Like, they have jurisdiction over firearms where they can be discharged, but they don't have jurisdiction over possession or storage or any of these federal responsibilities. And they're saying that if there's handguns are banned in a certain jurisdiction, whether it's a province or a municipality, that the federal government will support that by the firearms program not issuing a license to that person. And I'm like, so what you're telling me is that in downtown Toronto, you have people shooting each other with illegally imported, smuggled handguns. Even if they're stolen handguns, it doesn't matter. These are not licensed gun owners. And just because they victimized a gun owner doesn't mean gun owners are responsible for that crime. But nonetheless, it's 80% smuggled handguns. And your answer is some guy that owns a handgun legally that goes to a shooting club or whatever, an IPSC shooter or IDPA or whatever, he has to move out of Ontario or give up his guns? Like, it's madness. It's lunacy.
It is madness.
It is. It's pure malevolent madness. I can't even come up with enough words to describe it. So it's just insane. And why anybody would believe any of these people is beyond me. They are just the most prolific, insidious liars ever. You know, and what do? They want to make sure that they minimize the opposition. So we get censored on social media. We get shut out of any meetings with them. We can't bring any expertise. Like, I'm not saying I know the most about this topic of anybody, but I know a little bit about it, and certainly a lot more than most anti-gun people. They're just outraged all the time. They don't actually have a lot of facts at their disposal. And then they say, we have no facts. Well, I'm more than happy to get into meetings with these people and let's solve this problem. And their answer is just like, no, we can't include anybody that has an alternative viewpoint to any of this stuff. So Canada's in big trouble, I think, in a lot of different ways.
I think so, too. And I think that's the problem. And I've said this on the show before, is that that's working on the assumption that they're after the same goal that we are. Right. We want to reduce crime and violence that we see in the streets. They want to reduce legal gun ownership. We don't have the same goal. And that's why our ideology doesn't align, because they've just got one goal, and it's not public safety.
Yeah. Well, you know, they just don't think that we should own guns. You know, they want to be the only ones with guns. And that in itself should be very alarming to people. They go, well, wait a second. If licensed gun owners aren't really doing anything wrong, or it's super, super rare, which it is, then what's going on? Why can't we have guns, but you can have all the guns? And that's a real problem, the more you think about it. But anyway, speaking of that, the Canadian Taxpayer Federation did a access to information request, an ATIP, and were able to get at least most of the IBM report on how the Liberal government is going to roll out a gun buyback.
Right. So we've been talking about this quite a bit lately. Everyone's asking me what's going on with that. They're feeling a little nervous because, of course, the expiration of the amnesty is impending in the spring. And they're like, what's going on? What do we do? And I said, well, just sit tight for now, because here's the thing. There's nothing in place. They have not built this. What this IBM study is they went to IBM and they said, hey, here's what we want to achieve. You know, here's the problems. Can you figure it out for us? So IBM came back with a massive report. A lot of it drew from New Zealand and Australia data, trying to find different ways, giving them options on how to go about confiscating our legally acquired firearms. They quoted a number, something like 144,000 guns are affected by this, which is not just a lowball. Like, it's wholly inaccurate. It's over 500,000 guns, 517,977 guns have been banned in that May 1 OIC. And then, of course, the after bans through FRT changes, with a value of over $750 million. So I think they don't really want to be honest about that information. they, in the report, you know, I've been skimming through it all day. And of course, I've just been sticking it out there to everybody that wants to read it, because the more eyes on it, the more we catch, right? But they're relying on old 2012 registry data. Now, of course, the long gun registry is supposedly deleted, whatever, that's debatable. Maybe they're just working off the final numbers from the last registry. But to try and apply those numbers to 2021 with the increase in gun ownership and everything else, they're literally guessing. They don't have a clue what they're doing. This program, and you know, just reading through what IBM says is going to take to get this done, is going to take years. So there's no hope that this will be done by the end of the amnesty. So I would expect it to be extended. But yeah, just crazy. I don't know. Yeah. I think about, you know, when you think about $750 million just in the value of the guns, which doesn't, of course, account for any of the administrative or framework costs of trying to round up 500,000 guns from across the country. Like, we're talking secure storage facilities, secure transport, armed guards, 24-hour guards, like appraisers. Like, we're a massive country, oh, right?
Software infrastructure to track all this stuff. They talked about that in there. I just skimmed it. I didn't read every page.
Like,
but yeah,
it's, the project is almost too monstrous to even be possible. Like, I don't even understand how they're going to get this built. I think it's going to take years to build it. You know, and of course, billions of dollars. Like, this is going to blow the boondoggle of the long gun registry right out of the water. And then I think when people say, well, why don't you think they want to do a national handgun ban? I'm like, well, because they don't want the responsibility of having to follow through with it, right? And these are measures that only affect legal gun owners. You know, gangbangers and bad guys are literally exempt from it. Spending this amount of money, like, I just think, couldn't those resources be better allocated to programs like the One by One movement, you know, increased law enforcement, more resources for at-risk youth initiatives, technology at the border to help stop the smuggling of firearms. Like, there's a lot we could do with billions of dollars rather than chase around gun owners. It's like, is this punishment because, you know, we didn't vote for you? Like,
well, of course it is. It's all dividing Canadians into groups, villainizing that group, getting Canadians overwhelmingly to hate that group so that they cheerlead people like all the people we see on Twitter, sit there and cheerlead while the government puts a boot on the throat of a group that they don't agree with. You see it in vaccines. You see it in guns. You see it in fiscal policy. If you're a fiscal conservative, apparently you're akin to Satan himself. You know, like, it's just every single way that the liberals can divide Canadians and make everyone hate that group so they can literally do anything to them. You know, there's 18% of Canadians voted for the Liberal Party after everything that they've done to Canada since 2015. And this strategy has been used. The strategy was used in the 30s and 40s. This strategy has been used for thousands of years by people against other people. And you know, it's just amazing how a lot of people, they just can't see it and they're completely caught up in it. Because I look at the conversations, right? Like, I engage in some of those conversations and these people are like cult members. You'd be like, well, here, look, this is true. And they're like, no, it's not. I mean, like, well, no, hold on.
Yeah.
Here it is. It's like, nope, it's not there. I was like, okay. I don't know where we go from here, but you know, alerting you to facts that are easily demonstrable obviously isn't working. So it's a very strange time. So there's a lot of guns there. There's a lot of money, you know, $750 million just to purchase the guns. Now, not everybody's going to participate. In fact, it would probably be very low participation, but the cost of all that infrastructure, the administrative cost of doing all this stuff is going to be the same if 5 people show up with guns or, you know, 500,000 people show up with guns.
That's right.
So, and you know what Raquel Dancho said, and I'm going to start using this because it's so true. Every dollar spent on garbage like this, and she didn't call it garbage, I'll call it garbage. Every dollar spent on this kind of crap is a dollar not spent dealing with the root causes of violence in our country. And all those communities right now that are, where there's bullets flying in their neighborhoods, you know what they get out of that? Nothing.
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 No.
So anyway, I just, people don't think things through to their conclusion, including people that vote for liberals, right? The Liberal Party of Canada. You haven't thought it through to its conclusion, what these people are doing to you. So anyway, yeah, it's really terrible. The good news, I guess, is going to take a while to implement this. When I say a while,
it's
I don't
a
know.
Huge project.
Yeah, yeah. And then they have to reintroduce legislation, which will probably be worse than the last legislation. So at least we've got some time. I have to think through very carefully any comments that I would make about that. I'll give you an example. I'm not saying this, but I could see myself saying it after I've thought it through, that if there was any time that you would want to pick up non-restricted firearms, probably now would be a good time to do that. Mm-hmm. You know.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's, and the other thing I was like, there's one more thing I was thinking about. The other thing I was thinking about is, what's interesting is in this ATIPT plan, there's a lot of redacted pages and parts of this. I'm like, out of a gun buyback plan, what exactly do you need to redact out of there that's so sensitive and so secret that you can't let people know about it? That's, I'm really curious.
Yeah. Well, this coming from the government, who had information about why they even did this gun ban to begin with, that was so secret and so sensitive that they couldn't trust it with the Associate Chief Justice of the Federal Court of Canada.
Yeah, so, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, us plebs, well, we're not entitled to any information at all. Just shut up and pay your taxes.
Yeah. And give me whatever property you own when I say, and for whatever reason I say, you just give it up.
That's right.
Or you're an enemy to Canada and, you know, we'll savage you on television and social media.
Yeah.
So anyway, right. And then they criticize us for savaging them anyway.
Well, and then they call us extremists.
Yeah, exactly.
I would never think of treating people or my co-Canadians the way they treat them. So are not the extremists.
Yeah. I think so many people forget. I haven't taken a thing from the government. I haven't taken a thing away from any other Canadian, you know, when they're like, oh, you're playing yourself off as a victim. I'm like, yeah, actually.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
I'm the one that's having my stuff taken for actions of unlicensed criminals that are shooting each other in downtown Toronto. Here in Chilliwack, I'm getting my stuff taken away from me and getting called a racist, you know, so, and for no reason yet. I haven't found any reasons, but apparently we are racist. But anyway, last thing, let's talk about something positive, which is
the
Gunny Girl calendar is done.
Oh, dude, what a job. Like, I guess for everybody else just waiting. I mean, Kelly's been really great at sharing all these sort of promotional posts, doing a little, you know, the countdown is on type thing. But for us on the inside of this project, we've been working on it for months. So finally the day is here. When we get off of this, I'm going to get in the car and go pick them up. So they are ready. And of course, as you remember, this is a very special calendar. We used your idea of having an inserted poster. So you get a bonus poster. It's double-sided. It's got lovely ladies on one side, kind of a cool CCFR promotional poster on the other side.
It'll it was my idea.
Your idea. That was a Rod thing. So this is great. So of course there's a little bit of stuff I got to do. The calendars and the posters are printed separately. I got to, you know, engage my children in some child labor. And I'm going to stuff those calendars with the posters. We're going to apply the registration stickers on the back. once registration doesn't lead to confiscation, I always say that in the video because it's so fun. But yeah, we're going to get those up in the store for Monday. Now, everybody has been bombarding us. They're so excited to see the finished project. And of course, these are a limited item. There's only 2,500 printed, which is considerably more than last year, but we sold out in less than 2 weeks last year. So I don't know. Get them while you can. But if you live in any of these areas that I'm going to mention, you may want to hold off getting them online because you might be able to get them in person. We're going to do some calendar signings. So we're going to get some of these calendar girls together, which is really fun. We're going to go to some retailers. We're going to have calendars on site that you can buy and then have the girls sign them, take some pictures. It's kind of nice just to get out and see each other. Things have been so weird the last 2 years. So we make little events out of it. But Saturday, December 4th, we will be at SFRC Ammo Source near Kingston. December 11th, we'll be at Select Shooting Supplies and Bullseye North. I'm going to try my best to get to those myself as well. And then also on December 11th, for the people out west, we're looking at having calendar signings at Calgary Shooting Center and the Shooting Edge, both great supporters of the CCFR Women's Program. For more information on all of that, make sure you're following my social media, the CCFR social media. All that stuff will go out on the social channels. But yeah, you will be able to get your hands on these calendars in time for Christmas, which is great. So good job to everybody.
Awesome. One more question going back to the report. Did you put a web story up on firearmrights.ca and then make it available to download that report?
Absolutely. So that's what I did. First, I was emailing it around to everybody and I thought this is going to take me forever. And I really want, unlike the Liberals, I really want Canadians to be able to get their hands on stuff themselves and read it and not just take my word for it. So go to the CCFR website, punch in CCFR in your Google machine. The website comes up. It's the very first story on there. Full credit to the Canadian Taxpayer Federation for their work on that. That was just excellent. Within that story, it'll say, read the report here. Click on that. You can download and save that PDF. So you don't have to keep going back to the story. You can download and save it for yourself. I didn't comment a whole lot of it in the story because I'm still reading it. But I'll be going back and editing the post. But yes, you will be able to download it and read it for yourself, which is super important. Make sure you do that.
Okay, I'll put a link in the description in this video so that that people don't have to hunt around for it.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, that was quite a bit.
Yes.
But I appreciate it, and we will talk to you next time.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks to Tracy Wilson for coming on and all her hard work and coming on and updating us on what's going on, even from stuff this morning, man. All right. So. See if you can take part in that recruitment contest. Staffer Steve worked really hard on it. It's a great contest. Like I said earlier, great prizes. Just go to firearmrights.ca. Look for that recruitment contest. Just look down there, go to your member login. And I think it's pretty intuitive from there. It's going to take a little bit of effort, but I'm just asking you to put that little bit of extra effort in and try to recruit a few people. It really helps us. It allows us to keep going. It allows us to do more, allows us to be a bigger dog. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We will see you next time and take care.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.